topic for this evening, the third in our series, is the Sunset Badeken, or the Long Badeken, as they called it in the on the flyer. The basic scenario is one that we try to avoid when people set up their weddings, but it happens from time to time. I think I mentioned last week it happened to me early on in my rabbinic career. The couple says, we'd like to get married at, and I'm just going to make up times at this point, but they say, we'd like to have the Kabbalah Panim at 5 o'clock and the Chuppah at 6 o'clock. And Shkia is 10 after 6, and the Badeken runs long, and the result of it is that they don't actually do Kiddushin until after Shkia, until after 6:15. The ksuba, which was taken care of at the chasan's tish, that's the general minhag, although as we'll see, not universal. But the general minhag is that you take care of the ksuba, you fill it out, and you bring it to the kanina, and you have them pick up the handkerchief, and you have the witnesses sign. The ksuba has a date, which is based on the previous day, right? So in other words, let's pretend it was Monday when they were doing all of this. So the ksuba will say, b'sheni b'shavas, and give the proper date for Monday. But in fact, the chuppah doesn't happen until Monday night, Tuesday. And so the question is, what's the status of this ksuba, right? Is this valid, or is this indeed a problem? What would you say?
Cross out the date.
So crossing out the date is going to create a whole raft of other problems. Please don't do that.
Why is the ksuba? I don't know. Why would it be a problem? I mean, why would it be a problem at all? Ksuba is a ksuba, and the kiddushin is the kiddushin. Does the ksuba, which is written before the kiddushin, say that you've already done the kiddushin?
Good. So that's part of exactly what we need to discuss. The fundamental question that this is really about, and the interesting question that comes up, besides the practical question, which is also interesting in its own right, but the philosophical question, which is behind it, which is really interesting, is the question of, to what does a ksuba actually testify? Ksuba is edus. We have edim sign on the ksuba. What exactly are they attesting? What are they saying happened? So in order to address this, we have to go back and ask, what is a ksuba altogether? So you may be familiar with the fact that while ksuba, literally written, refers to the document, it's not talking about the document per se, it's talking about a ksuba payment. The ksuba payment as it's currently constructed, and has been since the days of the Gemara, is a payment which a man pays to his wife in the event of divorce, or in the event that the man predeceases his wife, his estate pays this amount of money to the wife. This, however, is not an amount of money which becomes the wife's property at the end of the marriage. She has a right to it all along. His property is encumbered for the payment of this ksuba, such that in the event that his property would be sold off, given away, whatever, in his lifetime, and then he passed away, she would have the ability to go back to those who acquired the property from him after the marriage and say, excuse me, but I have a right to claim the ksuba out of this property. And that's what we think of as the ksuba payment now. But in order to really get at what the ksuba payment is, you have to go all the way back to the Chumash and a sum called a mohar. If you take a look at source Aleph, this gives us the rules in the case of pitui, in the case of a man who seduces a woman. In the event that the man seduces this single girl, he has to marry her. But I don't know, it didn't say he has to marry her, it said he has to do mohar for her. What is mohar? So Rashi says, yifsok la mohar kemishpat ish leishto. He has to pledge for her a mohar amount of money, as a man does for his wife. Shekosiv laksuba v'yisa ena. And then Rashi gets a little bit anachronistic. He says, the man writes a ksuba for her and marries her. As we're going to see, in Chumash Bereishis, or Chumash Shmos, you don't yet have a ksuba document. We'll talk about that. But the idea fundamentally is that there was a sum called a mohar, which a man would pay upon marrying a woman. It wasn't even a Jewish practice exclusively. You know that from source base. Go back to the story in Shechem with Dinah. When Dina's brothers come to negotiate the but Shechem says to her father Yaakov and to her brothers, Asher tumur elai etain, whatever you tell me to give, I'm going to pay it. Harbu alai ma'od mohar umatan. Demand a lot of me, mohar, there's that word again, as well as gifts, and I will give it whatever you tell me. I just want to have her as my wife. In fact, the Muslim community, till this day, has a payment called mohar. It's the same thing. Sometimes you see it spelled M-O-H-R, mohar. But it's the same idea, a payment that really is with the beginning of the marriage. I'm not going to discuss now Muslim law, or it's a fascinating thing in its own right, is it still done at the beginning of the marriage? It's not the point for our purposes, but that's really our starting point, and it becomes the ksuba payment, which, again, he owes her, starting from the beginning of the marriage, in the sense that his property is encumbered for its payment. It's true that if she predeceases him, right, they stayed married to the end, and then she died first, then there is no payment. Then there's no payment to make. But fundamentally, the duty for it is in the beginning. At what point did we start writing this down in a document and calling it a ksuba? Unclear. Certainly, by the second century Common Era, it is already found in written documents that we have actually know about. There is a document called, in Source Gimel, the Ketubah of Babata, which has been found from the 2nd century. Hundreds of ketubot dating to the 6th century and later have been found in the Cairo Geniza. But we know in the Gemara, in any case, the Mishnah and the Gemara talk about a ksuba document. It's not like it's a surprise, it's just very interesting that we found physical documents. We're not used to finding physical documents because parchment doesn't survive. It's a remarkable thing when you find one. The Gemara in Ksuvas Daf Yud Amar Aleph debates whether Ksuva should be seen as a biblical requirement or whether it's a derabanan that's based on mohar payment. Most Rishonim believe that Ksuva is derabanan. So, for example, take a look at the Rambam in Source Dalet. The Rambam is talking about the case of a mefuta, a woman who was seduced. Remember that the rule is that the man has to marry her, as we already saw in Source Aleph, and the rule is he's not allowed to divorce her. If she wants out, that's a different story. But he has no ability to initiate divorce. Well, keeping in mind that one of the most basic purposes, if not the most basic purpose for the ksuba, is an impediment to divorce, to make him stop and think before he divorces her, you should know you're going to have to pay up on this commitment if you do it. So therefore, the Rambam tells us, in the event that he seduced her, and therefore he's not allowed to divorce her, there's no ksuba payment, because it doesn't matter. He can't divorce her anyway. He can't initiate. Because the whole point of the enactment was so that he wouldn't divorce her frivolously, which he can't do here anyway. He can still die, but the ksuba isn't the disincentive from dying. There are other things that are disincentives from dying, like dying. But the point here, and the reason why I quote this halacha, is that the Rambam says explicitly it was a takanas chachamim.
It's not just a disincentive. Gets
right, but it's not as much about her benefit. In other words, she has other protections for her. The ksuba document, not the ksuba payment, but the ksuba document includes 10 different ways in which he is responsible to her, including some that will extend posthumously in terms of support, separate from the ksuba payment. But the Rambam writes here, and indeed it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch and Ebenezer Ezer Samachvav, that Ksuba is Dirabanan. There are those who disagree. There's a Tosfos in Ksuba Stav Yudam Adalav, Amarav. There are other views. However you slice it, by the time the outline of halacha is recorded in the Mishnah, right, canonized, published in the early 3rd century, you have a document called Ksuba. And in the terms of the Ksuba, the husband obligates himself to pay his wife a sum of money in the event of the circumstances we have already described. And that's brought in Shulchan Aruch, Eben Ezer, Tzadi Gimel, Tzadi Dalet, that gives us the specifics of these terms. As I said, there are other obligations that are also recorded in the Ksuba. Fine. But what does the document accomplish? If it's true that when you marry her, you automatically have a responsibility for this payment, what exactly does the document do? So there are, in halacha, there are two basic kinds of shtaros, two kinds of legal documents. Shtar, legal document. There are two kinds. One is called a shtar raya. Maybe it should be ri'ya. I don't know. But we call it shtar raya. And the other is called a shtar kinyan. A shtar raya is a document written by the witnesses. The speaker, or the speakers really, are the witnesses. And the text of the document say, we who are signed below saw the following thing happen. So for example, there's a loan. The document says, the two of us were standing there and we saw Abraham lend money to David. Right? And they said that the date is going to be such and such, and they did a kinyan and whatever. You know, that's the shtar raya. We saw X happen and they signed it. As opposed to what's called a shtar kinyan, which is a document that itself affects the transaction, creates the transaction, in which the speaker in the document is the person who takes on the obligation. So, to go back to our loan case, the borrower writes the document saying, I borrowed X sum of money from so-and-so, and I agreed that I'm going to pay it back by such and such a date. And then he'll sign it. You don't need witnesses to sign it, except that you need witnesses to the existence, to the validity of the signature. But you don't require witnesses to sign the document. So, shtar raya is a document that just memorializes an event that took place. Shtar kinyan, on the other hand, the fact that you wrote a document saying, I owe so-and-so money, and you handed it over, that actually creates the obligation. In the event that you didn't have the document, there will be no obligation. The document itself creates it. That's a shtar kinyan. Take a look now at the ksuba that I brought you in source Hay. This is a basic text of a ksuba. I have taken out the names of the parties involved. They say it to spare the innocent. But Be'echad B'Shabbos, all the dates, all the places. Echsha Chasar Amar Lalahada B'Sulta. The groom said to this girl, heavily the Intu Kedas Moshe B'Yisrael, be my wife according to the laws of Moshe in Israel, and I will do the following. I will Eflach Va'okir Be'ezom V'Farnas Yisei Lechi. I am going to work. So there, I'm going to get a job. And I'm going to honor you, and I'm going to feed you as Jewish men do. And I'm going to give you, there's that word, the mohar, right? Kesef zuze masan, 200 zuz, which you have a right to, mide oraisa, and your mezonos, and your clothing, and your support, the whole bit. Vitzavias, in the second paragraph, Vitzavias besulta daba habasle the intu, and she agreed to become his wife. Michael, you should be starting to wonder at this point, right, based on what you said back in the beginning, right? The document says she agreed to become his wife, and here is the dowry that is coming in from her house, and the husband accepts responsibility for it, and he adds another 100 silver coins. And then the third paragraph, the Kaf Amar Hassan Dinan, so says our Hassan, responsibility for this, for all that is recorded here, meaning the Nidunya, the Tosefta, and all of that, I accept upon myself, and I expect it and accept it upon my heirs to be paid out of any property I have now, property I will acquire later, encumberable property, non-encumberable property, all of it is going to be responsible for collection of this Suva payment, dot, 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 my lifetime, even later, now and forever. The last bit I just want to show you is in the last full line, V'kanina min chasan denan, we performed a kinyan with this chasan for her on all that is written here, and it is all binding. So, is this document a shtaraya or is it a shtar kinyan? Sounds like a shtaraya, right? It's a document that is signed by the witnesses, right? That's your first giveaway. And it describes what they saw. It quotes the chasan, but the chasan isn't actually speaking here. Right? That's the way it works. The shtar is not what creates the kinyan. The shtar memorializes the kinyan. You do this kinyan suda, right? You pick off the handkerchief or the pen or whatever it is in order to accept responsibility for the obligations that are recorded in the ksuba. But the ksuba itself doesn't create an obligation. Ed?
You said that it's a job like Jewish men do. You meant like Jewish men used to do?
No, I meant like Jewish men do. Thank you. So what exactly, if this is a shtaraya, if you are testifying that an event took place, what event is it that the ksuba is attesting to? What event is it?
He proposed something, and she accepted it.
Did they see any such thing happen?
It's his commitment for the money.
It's his commitment for the money. In other words, it's commitment that if she says yes... If she does marry me, then I will take on these responsibilities. Does that fit the language in the ksuba? Is that what the ksuba said? I agree with you in principle that would be a good idea. But the language here was, have a slave into, right? If it's avias besulta da, in the beginning of the second paragraph, if it's avias besulta da, but have a slave into, she willed it, savi. Right, in Aramaic, is to desire something. Eretz Tzvi is not really the land of the deer on a pshat level. It is the desirable land. So this Besula desired and became his wife. Huh. That's really interesting. And that is what drives our entire question about the ksuba that has the wrong date. That's exactly where we get into trouble. The first view regarding the ksuba that we described, where the chasan's tish took place on Monday, however, the chuppah didn't happen until Monday night after sunset, and the date is Monday, the first view is the view taken by Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rav Moshe Feinstein, which is, you have a problem. Your ksuba is no good. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach wrote this in a haskama, the sort of introductory approbation, the sort of thing that people generally don't read, on the Sefer Ksuba Kehelchasa. He says, the Ksuba in this case appears to testify that the couple got married that day. And that's simply not true. And we do assume, when we have such a document, we assume that the date on the ksuba is the date they got married. Proof of that is in the Shulchan Aruch. Take a look at source Vav, the Ramah. Matzu kasuv bishtar. If they find a document with the following thing recorded in it, it says, ploni kidesh plonis. It's a shtaraya, right? Witnesses wrote and signed the document that said, so-and-so was mekadesh so-and-so. The edim chasumim bo. The witnesses are signed on it. Kol zman shein hashtar mekuyam ein lachash lekidushin. So if the shtar is not mekuyam, meaning if we haven't validated their signatures, then the document is meaningless. But the implication is, if you do validate the signatures, this is sufficient to consider them married. We assume that it is valid. So that's Rav Shlomo Zalman's position. The practical applications of this, of an incorrectly dated ksuba, are significant. Number one, incorrect securing of the property based on the original date. Right? Let's say they did get married. Let's say they wrote the document on, I don't know, March 11th. Okay? Right? March 11th isn't the real date. They wrote the document on Gimel Adar or Dalet Adar or whatever it is. And they didn't get married until Dalet Nisan. Then, after some period of time, Rachmana Litzlan, he passes away or they are divorced. And then there isn't enough property to be able to claim the ksuba because it was taken in the course of the marriage. Maybe even it was taken before the marriage.
Yeah. He makes the kinyan.
Yes.
Isn't she supposed to take the kinyan?
Why?
Well, the contract is between her and him.
Right, but who's obligated?
Yeah, but she has to, doesn't she have to pick up the ksuba to make the kinyan?
No.
To obligate her?
Nope. No.
Perfect.
No, to obligate him. In other words, the fundamental function of the ksuba is really to document his obligations, even though she has a role that is described in it. It's really about documenting his obligations, and therefore she does not need to. She needs to have her ksuba for a completely different reason.
Yeah, but if she walks from the kuba, this whole thing is up.
That has nothing to do with receiving the ksuba. That has to do with not going through with kiddushin and nisuin. If she goes through with kiddushin and nisuin, she is married. Without a ksuba document, they may be usher to each other, but they're still married. The reason I stress it is because there is a practice which has evolved over the last few decades of having witnesses to the handover of the ksuba as though that somehow does something, because there is such a thing as kiddush eshtar. However, Rav Asher Weiss and others roundly condemn it. They say it's not necessary, it's a new fad, and there's no way that a ksuba succeeds as kiddush eshtar. It's not written right to be a shtar for kiddush. He's not happy with that practice. But as a general principle, when you have obligations that go from party A to party B, party A accepts responsibilities to party B, all you require is that party A perform the kinyan. So if I wanted to create an artificial debt, if I went to witnesses and said, I owe money to Ed, I owe $1,000 to Ed, they would dutifully write the document, and that would be that. Now, I'm cheating by giving that because I'm pretending that it already existed as a debt. So I said to them, no. I said to them, I am creating an obligation for myself now. They would say, okay, fine, do some act of kinyan. And I would say, okay, pick up the pencil that demonstrates that I am serious, that this is now a debt to Ed, and he doesn't have to do anything. Yeah, that's the way that would work. So one problem is that his property is secured based on the original date on the ksuba, but it's not the date when they actually got married. Unless you're going to say, well, that's okay, because he accepted it when he did his kinyan on the document. He accepts it as of right now. We'll see that that's not true. We're going to say that he accepts it based on when they get married. If, God forbid, something happens, they don't get married, he's not interested in having this whole raft of obligations. More important than that, what if the following happens? You write the document on Monday with a Monday date, and they're getting married that night, and in between, a scene out of a Hollywood movie, right, her old boyfriend comes riding in, and he says, let me take you away from all this. And she says, you bet. Too much tension, too much stress today. I just want to go. And he ends up giving her kiddushin. Now, you have a document that says she's already married to so-and-so. But she's not. She's not married until this other guy comes along and actually gives her a ring. Right? So you're going to tell me her second marriage, which is really her first marriage, isn't anything because she has a ksuba that says she's already married. You can't marry a married woman. But the document is wrong. She actually didn't get married.
So that's not actually a problem with date. It's a problem with order.
Well, it's a problem of date because the date is what creates the mess. In other words, no one would have thought that this was valid if you had placed the date based on the chuppah when you expect the chuppah to take place.
If this document says she's already married and she's not, then the Adim are, you know,
no, because the date is that night. The date is that night. Oh. That's what I'm saying. The date should be. Rishon LeZalman's argument is that the date date will be that night. The date won't be there.
Testifying to it before it happens.
Yeah, that's not the point. Again, what we're saying is that you're jumping to a separate part of this, which is a concern. But I'm talking about this problem. The problem that we have right now is that on Monday at 3:00, you filled out a document that says that as of Monday she's married, when it hasn't happened. It's not happening until Tuesday. In the meantime, on Monday afternoon after 3:00, some guy comes along and gives her kiddushin. That's valid. That kiddushin is valid. but you're going to show me a document that says they were married on Monday. And now I'm going to say, wait a minute, he couldn't do that. They were already married. Now, one of the problems that we have in general with Shtaros is that we don't list hours. It doesn't say what time on Monday, just as Monday. But therefore, I'm going to call into question the validity of his Kiddushin. But in fact, his Kiddushin is fine. If the date had said what it should say, which is Tuesday, then we would all know everything, and we wouldn't have a problem. Havas Leila Intu wouldn't even be an issue, because it's Havas Leila Intu as of Tuesday, when it happens to be true. What you're pointing to, Michael, is a separate point which we have to get to, which is, so what are we doing writing that line in? We'll get there. These are some of the problems that you run into. So Shlomo Zalman says, in the event that your Badekin is going to run you through sunset, it's not really the Badekin, don't blame the Badekin, it's the Chassan Sish, it's the timing, it's the caterer, it's whatever you like, but it's the long parade of relatives and friends. But fundamentally, Shlomo Zalman says, you have a problem. Change the date on the Zuba. No, don't cross it out. Just use a different date on the Zuba. However, we have a problem. Rav Shlomo Zalman is making the assumption that witnesses to the Ksuba are indeed witnesses to the Kiddushin, right? Such that when I look at this document, I'm assuming that it is telling me that they're already married. And here now I come back to Michael's problem. Kiddushin hasn't happened yet when they sign. It doesn't matter when sunset is, right? It could be the longest day of the year. Okay, the sun, it's a Toronto long day. The sun isn't setting until 9:45 at night, right? And they could be getting married at 3 in the afternoon. And the chuppah is being held at 3. The Kabbalah's Panim was held at 2 o'clock. You signed it at 2 o'clock, and you lied. How can you tell me that the witnesses are witnesses to the Kiddushin? The witnesses on the Ksuba. Kiddushin hasn't happened yet. So, what is Rav Shlomo Zalman talking about? So Rav Asher Weiss has a series of tshuvos on this issue. As I wrote at the top of the sheet, it's Chelek Beis Tshuvos Tzadi Aleph through Tzadi Hey. Although I don't really count Tzadi Dalet, because he begins Tzadi Dalet by saying, I have nothing new to add, but I'm responding to you because you asked me questions, and I'm just going to repeat everything I've already told you. So Tzadi Dalet doesn't really count. But the other ones, each one adds an element. And he offers four ways how Rav Shlomo Zalman could explain that the Edim are Edim on Kiddushin, and he rejects each one. I'm not going through one of them, which is Rav Chaim al Rambam. I didn't find that it would help understand what's going on overall. But I want to go through the other three, because I think they're instructive. Three ways Rav Shlomo Zalman could explain that the Edim really are Edim on the Kiddushin, even though at the time that they signed the document, Kiddushin has not yet taken place. Number one is what I call long edus, and it's based on the Rif. The Rif in source Zion, on the Gemara in Yevamos. Umistavrolon, he's talking about a basic principle. The Torah, we say that you get testimony al pi shnayim edim, from the mouth of two witnesses. The Gemara says on that, mi pihem velo mi pi ksavam, and testimony is from their speech, not their writing. What does that mean? Let's look at the Rif. Umistabrolon, it's logical for us to say, ki amrinon rachmona amari pihem velo mi pi ksavam, delo aviola edus shebeksav edus, when we say in the Gemara that the Torah says from their mouths, not from their writing, that it's not, that edus that's in writing does not qualify as edus, it doesn't qualify as testimony. That's as long as the witnesses are holding onto the document. He says, it's the first bowl, that's the key line. He says, as long as the testimony has not left the hands of the witnesses, it's as though they have not testified. A document that they signed, they wrote and they signed, but they're holding on to, is like a thought that's inside their head. They haven't verbalized it. They haven't expressed it.
Or
to talk about this and warn against Seinfeld before it's actually going to be distributed?
Sorry, say it again. Let's talk about.
I think this is Mark Gibson that talks about signing a document to any child.
Yes.
Whether it's a loan or.
That it's a bad idea to sign it before it's ready for.
Unless it's ready to be deposited with Facebook.
Correct. Don't endorse the check until you're at the bank. Yes. This is true. But here they have. They've done it. They've signed it. They wrote the document out. They signed it and everything. But until they produce the document, it's not Eidos. And we'll say, Behem Velomi Pik Savan. Dahaibo Kav Shilala Shtara Velomisadi. Because if they want, they can just squelch it. Right? They could take it and tear it up if they wanted to. So if they tell people their testimony, that's Eidos. But otherwise not. Avol, however, the second bold, Shtara de nothing mitose yidei de baldin, yoni de baldin, lo minim bemi piyam velo mipik savamu. He says, there, if you have a document that already is in the hands of the litigant, the party to the case, then that's absolutely testimony. Once they sign the document and hand it over to this fellow, they can't retract it. It's as though they've given testimony and had it cross-examined already in court. In other words, what the RIF is understood to say here is that testimony begins when you sign it, and it ends when you hand over the document. That's when it actually ends. It's a process. And therefore, to go back to Michael's question, how can you write in the document, she agreed? The answer is, as long as she does agree before they hand it over, that's all part of what they are testifying to. It's not frozen in time at the moment that they write the document. It's actually extending until they actually hand it over. That's your first theory for how the ksuba could be considered testimony to the kiddushin.
So does the edom have to have control of it?
Then the edom needs to have control of it. Good, we're going to come back to that. Yeah.
But they're always saying she agreed. That's not kiddushin.
That the statement is, no, but Tzavias Bezul Dadav, they have us Leila into, and she became his wife. Yeah, it's the
So they're essentially so they're hanging on to it.
That's what it sounds like. Rav Asher Weiss is going to throw this out, but this is one possible way to explain how Rav Shlomo Zalman's read could work. But he says this doesn't work. Take a look at source Ches. The Shulchan Aruch has the following ruling. Chosam bishtara shlonase chosno v'nase chosno. What happens if you have somebody sign a document for you, be a witness, and then he becomes your son-in-law? At that point, he's no longer valid as a witness. But when he signed the document, he wasn't related to you. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Chosam b'shtara shlonase chosno. If he signed the document before he became your son-in-law, v'nase chosno, and then he became the son-in-law, who eino yachal l'hayed aksav yado. So he's not eligible to validate his own signature. He can't tell people that's my signature because we don't believe him. But other people can say we know the signature. Even if they didn't see it until the guy became a son-in-law, it doesn't matter. But then Yesh Misha Omer, and some say, that's only if somebody else other than the witness had the document. But if it's in the hands of the witnesses, then not because the testimony is not yet complete. That last view is the RIF. However, and this is the key point, he's bringing the RIF as a Yesh Omrin. General rule, Shulchan Aruch brings a view as this is what we do, and then says, and some say whatever, he's not posketing like the and some say whatever. He's not posketing like the Yesh Omrin. So first of all, if you're going to tell me, Rosh Shlomo Zalman, that you believe in the RIF, and therefore the witnesses are testifying about everything that happens until they hand over the ksuba, I'll tell you that we don't paskin like the RIF, and therefore this is a non-starter. They're not testifying to that. That's number one. And number two, even within the view of the RIF, the RIF's language doesn't have to be read as saying that it's when they give it to the Baal Hashtar. it could be read as once the document leaves their hands. It's tricky. I bolded two lines for you in Sur Zion. In the first one, it just said, as long as it hasn't left their hands. In the second one, it says, the second bold, it says, when the document is in the hands of the party. Nafkamina, the difference between the two, what if it's in the hands of the videographer? What if it's in the hands of the caterer? What if it's in the hands of the Masadr Kiddushin? Right? Usually it's in the hands of the Masadr Kiddushin. The witnesses don't hold on to the ksuba all the way to the chuppah. Right? The witnesses sign, they roll it up, and the Masadr Kiddushin usually brings it upstairs. Right? I think that's pretty much standard practice. So if the Masadr Kiddushin is now holding on to it, according to the first line that I bolded in the riff, their testimony is done. You can't tell me that they're testifying still. They're not. They already handed it over. The case is now closed. According to that read of the riff. And then third, and this is the third objection to this view, goes back to Michael's common sense read and just says, I get what you're saying, that the testimony continues until it leaves their hands. But at the moment they signed their name, the Kiddushin had not happened. You didn't see that. How can you sign your name to something that you haven't seen? Even if you're going to see it before you hand over the document. Right now, it didn't happen. So Rav Asher Weiss is not happy with this idea. So he brings you a second idea. The first idea is it's long testimony. The second idea is that the Edim know the future. The Edim know the future. It's not so hard to know the future. You just have to be a chacham. Is a chacham or a zanolad. The witnesses know what is going to happen. And this is based on a comment by the Nesivos HaMishpat in his Biurim. Take a look at source test. Dealing with witnesses on a loan, also witnesses on a get. Kishakosvin shtar lalova, la'olam ein ha'edim yodim mehalava'a. You know, let's say we wanted to do a loan. Let's say Chaim was going to lend me $1,000, right? So we arranged to meet at Shomer Shabbos in this room up in the Belfry on Monday night at 9:07 p.m. And we're going to meet and he's going to give me the loan. But he wants to be covered. He wants to be protected. Rather than say, let's bring in two witnesses and have them write up the document now, they already write up the document. They write the document up in advance. They don't. They're not going to wait until the time of the loan. We're in the middle of a shir. So he says, look at this. Kishakosvin shtar lelo velo olameina edim yodim mehalva. The loan hasn't happened yet when you actually write up the document. The ikare dusa nigmeris bishas mesiras hashtar. The testimony is really complete when they hand over the document. Kamoshakas of Haran, as the Ran writes, the Ede Chasima Mitam Mesira in Korsin, that the Aden who sign on the document are actually making this valid based on when the document is handed over. So according to him, they're even signing it before. And therefore, the essence is really when the borrower says, give the document to the lender who will now be able to use it to collect from me. Once he says, give it, Nigmara edusin bishas misira. That's when their testimony is complete. In other words, the witnesses on a loan, the witnesses on a get, are actually testifying on the ensuing event. Rav Asher Weiss says maybe that's what he means. The Edom are testifying by saying that hasn't happened yet, but everybody knows it's going to happen. Rav Asher Weiss, though, does not like that idea either. First of all, he says, we're going to see a Nesivos later who's going to say something different. That's number one. That he's going to say later that no, the Edom do not know the future. Number two, this is a real reach. It's even more of a reach than the Riff, right? The Riff said they're testifying when they hand over the document. The Nesivos is saying that they're actually testifying when the loan document is given to the creditor, right? When the husband hands the get to the wife or whatever it is. And the Nesivos brought support from the Ran, but he didn't really quote you the Ran. Take a look at Source Yud. I'm quoting you the Ran. Look at what the Ran actually said with an emphasis on the words in bold. Dilma Shemisiraso Koresas. He says, maybe handing over the document is what executes the deal. Because as long as you can validate the signatures of the witnesses, we're not concerned that anything was forged. Right? We know this is valid. The witness's signatures are supported. The anan sahade de'iu yave ni Allah kevan shage yotzi bitachas yada. Anan sahade means what?
We are witnesses.
We testify. We are witnesses that he gave it to her in the case of a get. Why? Because she's holding the get. Obviously, he gave it to her. We know what came next. Just like we'll say that if it was written properly and we have the proper witnesses to it and all that, and then she's holding the get, we assume, okay, he must have given it to her. It's an anan sahadi. It's not formal testimony. It's just we know that this happened. But Rav Asher Weiss is not comfortable at all with this nisivos. And further, he says, it really doesn't make sense here. It really doesn't make sense here. Because the ksuva is not about the kiddushin. It's about the duties of a husband. Right? It doesn't actually say he gave her anything. So he says it's not about that event. So he doesn't buy the idea that the Edom know the future. Third idea is maybe it could be Edus on the kiddushin because the parties agree to it. Because the parties agree to it, therefore we accept it as that which creates the obligation. And this is based on a view found in what's called the Shita Lono Delami. The Shita Lono Delami is exactly what it sounds like. It's an anonymous Rishon. We don't know who it is. There is some guesswork about whose student it may have been. But for our purposes, we're just going to leave him as the Shita Lono Delami. And he says the following. If they wrote this document on, don't worry about the document itself, it isn't going to matter for us, on paper or on clay, challenges. He says, wait a minute, if you write a document on clay, it can be erased. That's no good. It's for you could forge that. The avagav the kaimelon Rabbi Elazar damer edim esirat kaiti vafilu b'ksav shiachol izayev kosher. Granted that we follow Rabbi Elazar, who says that witnesses to the handover of a document are valid, even if it's written on a piece of paper that could have been tampered, that could be tampered with. Halo hechsher Rabbi Elazar ala begitin aval b'shtaros lo. Rabbi Elazar only validated that for get, not for general documents. So he says, Yesh Lomar, you could say, Ki amrinan de'in alacha k'rabi elazer b'shar shtaros, hani mili l'mitref b'humi mishubadi. This is the key for our purposes. When we say that we don't follow Rabbi Elazar, that we are not willing to accept the document if it's with other shtar, if it's a non-get, hani mili l'mitref b'humi mishubadi, that's as far as using the document to claim property that has a lien on it. There we won't accept it. Why? Because since you don't have valid signatures on the document, people won't know of it, and therefore you're gonna destroy commerce with this. However, you could acquire a field using a demisira. Now I realize I didn't explain a whole lot here about the forgeable and all that because it didn't matter for our purposes. What matters for our purpose is that the Shita Lono Delami says you can use a shtar raya, not a shtar kinyan, but go back to what we said in the beginning, a shtar raya, a document which has witnesses who say we saw a transaction. You can use that to create a kinyan. You're able to do it, even though it's written as though we saw something happen and the actual event hadn't happened yet. Why? Because the parties are okay with it. So maybe that's the answer here. Maybe Rav Shlomo Zalman's position is that the ksuba memorializes the kiddushin, even though the witnesses haven't seen the kiddushin yet, because husband and wife are good with it. Maybe that's what his thinking is. The problem is that the Ritva disagrees with this idea. In Yud Beis, we get a Gemara in Bava Basra, and then in Yud Gimel, we get a Ritva commenting on it. But because we're getting late, I'm not going to read it inside. But the Ritva quotes the view of the Bala Iter, who says, a Shtar Raya does work for a Kenyan, But you can't have the language of the witnesses saying, we already saw such and such. That is not going to work. And further, Rav Asher Weiss says, it's all well and good for you to do that with financial deals. But marriage involves Isurim. You're declaring her to be a married woman. You can't just say, well, don't worry about it. We've all agreed that we're going to treat her as though she's married. If she accepts Kiddushin from somebody else in the interim, you can't say, well, she was already a married woman. She wasn't already a married woman. You can't play that game of, well, we just view it as though. So, three different explanations for how you could argue that the Ksuba testifies to the Kiddushin, even though it hasn't happened at the time of the signature. Either they're testifying until the moment they hand it over, or the Edom know this is what's going to happen, everybody knows what's coming next, or the parties are good with it. And Rav Asher Weiss rejects each of the three views. And he proposes his view, which is, the Ksuba only testifies, and Sal, you said this before, that they testify that when they marry, the husband will take on the obligations that are recorded in the Ksuba. That's his idea. And he says, I have a number of reasons to say this. First and foremost, as in Source Yedalit, he writes, he says, in my humble opinion, he doesn't like disagreeing with Roshlomo Zalman Orbach. He's very concerned about doing that. But he says, in my very humble opinion, I don't see any concern with this testimony. How could you say that they're testifying to the Kiddushin? She's not Mekudesh yet. That's nonsense. And he says, granted that witnesses on a get, or witnesses on a loan, sign before the get is given, right? I've been in the position, and not many people here have been in this position, I've been in the position of signing as an aid on a get. So when you sign as an aid on a get, right, you sign the document before the husband gives it to the wife. Right, that's in Tzias, that's what you do, unless I'm remembering wrong, but I know I'm not remembering wrong. That's what you do. So how can you sign on it beforehand? They're not testifying to the event. That's the point. I don't care what the language says.
Isn't it kind of an affirmative?
What do you mean?
The kinyan happens in the affirmative. If it goes to the wedding, then...
Oh, you're not on the get, you're on the wedding.
On the wedding.
Happier side. Okay, yeah. You're saying that what?
It's an affirmative. When I made the kinyan, it's based on when I...
Oh, boy, that would be novel. No one floats that idea that he is obligated in those things from the moment of the signing of the Ksuba. That would be radical. That's a great view, but I haven't seen anybody float that idea. But take a look here at the Nesivos. Remember I said to you, the Nesivos contradicts that idea that you're testifying about the future? That's here. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Tesbav, Shtar Sheyatza Bebeisdin, a document emerges in court. Ubo Eidim Va'amru Ksav Yodeinu Huzeh. Witnesses come along and say, yeah, that's our signature. Av Me'olam Oyadanu Eidu Zub Eidu Zochun Shazel Lava Mizeh Macharlo. We have a problem. Yes, that's my signature, but I have no idea what that document is talking about. I never saw that in my life. Somehow I got signed on it, but I don't actually know anything. Lo Niskaya Mashtar. The document is not considered to be valid, based on this validation of the signatures, until they remember. The fact that their signature is there, and they acknowledge it's their signature, is irrelevant if they don't remember the events that are supposed to have happened. On that, the Nesivos writes, in Source Tes Zion, he says, Omnam adin emes, it's true. When they remember that they signed at the command of the borrower, that's sufficient. After all, you could write a document for a debt just to the borrower without the creditor even being there. If that's true, if you can write a document for a loan without a lender being present, that means the witnesses can say, we saw that so-and-so lent money to him, even without their having... They can't say that. In other words, the witnesses don't need to be able to say, we saw the loan take place, because clearly they don't. What are they? Alamasira Anan Sahadi, regarding a handoff, they say, yeah, we are witnesses, just like the Ram that we talked about. The Chavan Dechol Edu Iker Edusen Shabashtar, he Raksha Nichta Betsivoy Amishai Vizez, Zochrin Sagi, as long as you say that the only thing that they're testifying to is that they were told, sign here, that is good enough. They're testifying that the document was prepared properly. They're not testifying that the events that are recorded in the document actually took place. That's the idea. He also brings a Kovetz Shiur and Bava Basra Tafresh to support the idea as well. And Rav Asher Weiss says, look at the Ksuba and look at the Edim, and you know this is true. Take a look at Source Yudayin. He says, first of all, I mentioned this already before, Mishum kach ein muzgar b'ksuba shenasam l'kesef ashtar l'kidushah. That's why the document doesn't say, the ksuba doesn't say he gave her a ring. It doesn't say he gave her a shtar. It doesn't say anything about that. Vein zecher, there's nothing. El dinu tvarm shabneim. It just says he has agreed. He's going to do such and such for her. Get a job, right? That's what it says. Not only that, Yudches, the Minchas Asher points out, Rav Asher Weiss points out, anybody here ever been in a ksuba? You signed on it. You've been in a ksuba. You've signed on a ksuba. Where were you then at the time of the chuppah, when the kedushin actually happened? Where were you?
Sitting comfortably.
Sitting comfortably in the crowd. Why weren't you up there watching the ring?
They have other
Edim
there.
They have other Edim there. So Rav Asher says, doesn't that prove that the Edim on the Ksuba are not testifying to the Kiddushin? If they were testifying to the Kiddushin, you should have them standing there watching the hand over the ring. They have no idea what's going on. There isn't even a simulcast on a video screen. They can't see the ring being handed off. We wouldn't trust the video screen anyway. But obviously not. And so it's very interesting. Take a look at Yudches. Yudches, he says, Rav Shlomo Zalman said, Masha Kasav, or maybe as a person who asked the Mechas Asher this question, there's an attempt to defeat this argument and to say, yes, it's true, they appoint Eidei Kiddushin, but that's only in order to honor the Chasin and Kala, so we have another couple involved there. Maybe it's to honor the other witnesses who you're bringing up. Either way, that's why we're doing it. But he says, who cares? Why does that matter to me? Who cares what the reason is for doing it? He says, Mikol makom, nagu she'ein eidei haksuba makbidin klal liros hakiddushin. The bottom line is that they don't see the kiddushin. How can you call it? It is on the Kiddushin. They didn't even see the Kiddushin. You could tell them that it didn't happen, and they would believe you. Right? No way. And he says, I'll go even further. In earlier times, in some Ashkenazi communities, they signed the Ksuba only after the Kiddushin. Rav Asher Weiss even says in one of his Chuvos that B'nai HaYeshiva in Israel do this today. I've never ever seen it, but I haven't really been to too many weddings in Israel, so what do I know? But take a look at the tshuva he quotes from the Mari Bruna, a Rishon, on this. Nish'alti, I was asked, Kain said Yase b'kinyan u'b'ksuba. What do you do with kinyan and ksuba? What's the process? Ve'shavti, and I answered, Harbe min hagim shamat yutmum heim be'enai. This is centuries and centuries ago. He says, I've heard of so many different minhagim on this, and they're shocking to me. I don't understand why anybody does what they're doing. You feel like he could just, you know, pop up today and we feel very at home. The shamati b'reinus. I think that's Motzei Shabbos, although I don't understand why. He says, you know what I've heard? They do Kiddushin under the Chuppah, and then they do the Kinyan for the obligations that are in the Ksuba, and they don't sign the Chuppah until later. And they'll do a Kriyas HaKsuva at that point, an unsigned Ksuba. At that stage, the kasha lituva. He says, "I don't understand what you're doing." Chada, first of all, how about biyom lemichtam lamal yachtam aksuva mitchila? First of all, you had time. Why didn't you sign it before? Ve'od and further, kikari aksuva below edim mechzik shikra. If you read out the document that lists his obligations, but he hasn't actually agreed to them, you're lying. Or it looks like lying, I should say. That phrase matters. And when you hand the ksuba to her, you're just giving her a piece of paper. Because it doesn't even have a signature on it yet. And I have news for you. If he lives with her on this basis, that's nus, because there's no valid ksuva. But he brings this in order to show you there was a practice, in fact, of signing the ksuba later. I'm not going through the whole piece of Mari Bruna just because I'm watching the clock. but their reason for doing so, for doing this later, their reason why they did this later, they do this the rest of the Mari Bruna, so I feel bad for not reading it out, but I'll tell it to you. The reason why they did it was because it would look like a lie to say that he accepted the duties of marriage before the wedding. That's why they would do it. However, if Asher Weiss says, that's fine. But it's not Eidus Sheker. It looks like Eidus Sheker. It's a very important distinction. Look at Chaf. He says, Nira demashakasuv b'ksuba dehavas lele intu, einza misparish ke Eidus ala kidushin. That phrase that bothered you, Michael. That it says that she agreed and she became his wife. Right? He says, that doesn't mean they're testifying that the kidushin happened. He says, "Dishtar ze ikaro ve'inyano ischayvus alaksuba veloshtar kiddushin." This document simply says, "I accept that when I marry her, I will have all of these obligations." Kavanas adram da'idim chosim and lemor dela'achar shtiskadish ishazu aydechas and mischayvu b'chol akasav ksuba. At that point, I'll be obligated. Velo danu bar rishonim alim shum demechzik ashikra. The only reason the rishonim even had a discussion of when to sign the ksuba is because it looks false, and it does look false. We agree. But that doesn't make it Eidus Sheker. That's the difference. And therefore, since it's not testifying that the Kiddushin took place, therefore your date doesn't matter. No one is taking that date as the date when the wedding actually happened. It's the date when he did his act of kinyan, saying that when I am married, I will have all of these obligations. That's the way to look at it. And Rav Asher Weiss brings support for this from a few sources, which I'm going to explain outside. First of all, the Shivas Tzion, or Shmuel Landau, was asked a question. In the case of Kiddushin al Tanai, people get married on condition. There are, it's a rare thing, but it exists. The concept of getting married conditionally, such as the case in which the Chassan has a brother who is a mumer, and there's a concern that in the event that, God forbid, the Chassan dies without children, his brother will never do chalitza and she'll be stranded. There are cases of kiddushin al tanai. The problem is this. The ksuba doesn't record any such condition. It just says that he asked her to be his wife and she said yes. Right? So now you have a problem. Because who's going to know that there ever was any such condition? The ksuba doesn't record the condition. So Shmuel Landau was asked this question, and Shiva Sion, he answered, yeah, don't worry about it. The ksuba isn't aidus to the kiddushin. That's not the role the ksuba plays. Further, Rav Asher Weiss points out, some poskim permit kiddushin on Shabbos. Right? We don't do that. But there are poskim who permit kiddushin on Shabbos. You're going to tell me you write the ksuba also on Shabbos. Obviously, it was written and signed on Friday. Right? That has to be the case. No one says, well, just omit Havas Lele into. And he brings you a story. From Piskei Din Yerushalayim, Rav Baruch Tzvi Levin, the Av Beis Din, who said he was a Mesader Kiddushin for a wedding with Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer and Rav Aaron Cutler present. They were there at the wedding, and it was one of those weddings where the chuppah runs through sunset, so that the ksuba has the date from the previous day, and the chuppah runs through sunset. And he asked Rav Aaron Cutler, what do I do? And Rav Aaron Cutler said, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Why? Because there's kalah, because everybody saw and everybody knows. We signed before the chuppah, we're good. And when I was in Smicha at YU, I heard shir from Rav Bleich on wedding issues, and I double checked the shir notes. And he said, it's true that we're not thrilled with this, but Lemaisa, your ksuba is valid in this case. Yes, everyone wants you to use the date of the chuppah. If you know that you're running into this situation, then use the date for the chuppah, not the date when you're doing the ksuba. That's a basic principle. We don't like documents that say things that aren't true. We try to avoid that kind of situation in principle. And so he writes in Chav Gimel, he says, yes, it would be better for you to do that the second date. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is, he says, in other documents, the date is really only about the time when the document was written. That's all it's attesting to. And he brings you a proof from a Rashbam in Bava Basra, which I brought you in Chaf Dalet. We generally assume that two shtaros with the same date were written and transferred on that date. He says you could argue ksuba is different. It's not important for us right now. The bottom line is, your ksuba with the incorrect date is still valid. I brought it at the end, but I had a feeling I wasn't going to get to it, what Rav Moshe's basis is for his position. Rav Moshe Feinstein in Divros Moshe, as well as two places in the Igros Moshe, takes the position that, in fact, this is no good, based on a Tosos, but there isn't time for us to go through it. I brought you the Gemara and the Tosos in Chafei and Chavav. Rav Asher Weiss has a different read of what Tosfos is saying, and maybe at some point in the future we'll go through it. Who knows?
So according to Rav Moshe and Shlomo Zalman, what should one do?
Cross you would need a, no, you would need a nuksuba. No, you would just do a nuksuba.
That's the other thing.
On whatever. A good Masada Kiddushin has a spare. Yeah. That's what you do.
Just writing the data.
Right, so the problem is that there are all sorts of rules about legal documents, making sure that you don't write it in a way that it looks like it was forged or somebody could tamper with it further. And that's what you end up with writing that runs outside of lines and that sort of thing. There are ways to make changes and be mekayim the change, it's called, but we